Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends. It's me, Justin Robert Young.
And Brian Diamondback Brushwood.
Diamondback. I like that. I mean, maybe I've been branded. I went to a town of diamonds and I stole all their diamonds. They're like, you want a diamond? Take this one on your back. And I'm like, I've been branded for life.
Pretty much. Pretty much exactly why I said that. So, you know, it's just another day of, you know, another day, another Weird Things podcast, another Weird Things episode, just another week of, oh my God, we're in the middle of the Rocket Wars, guys.
Wait, Rocket Wars? It's finally happening.
Rocket Wars begun, they have.
I thought the Rocket Wars were what we grew up in the Cold War with a bunch of like the U.S. and Russia.
You thought that the U.S. versus Russia at the height of the Cold War was the pinnacle of a pig-headed egotism fueling rapid and amazing technological advancement until Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos started fencing their boners.
And meanwhile, the weird part to me is that quietly in the background, NASA folks are being like, I don't know, I'm not all that bullish on all this private space travel.
Well, not folks, right? Well, here, let's take this piece by piece. All right. There is obviously news here, Andrew. I think you probably have the details a little bit more down.
I take exception to pig-headed. I would say ambitious, arrogant, for sure, in all the best ways, but I don't know, they're pig-headed. I think it's pretty awesome.
Okay. No, I mean, I was going for the joke. That was not an accurate, a truthful assessment.
Not a true indictment. Look, you'll know it when you're indicted by Justin Robert Young.
Yes. Crayon subpoena. So if you follow Blue Origin, which is the space super secretive space startup started by Jeff Bezos, founder of Amazon, super, super, super big Star Trek geek, actually has a cameo role in the current Star Trek movie, which is good. You haven't had a chance to see it. Check it out. You'll know that Blue Origin's been doing their own little space program. They've did things. They have their new Shepard rocket, which they've sent up past the Kármán line. The Kármán line is the line at which we say space sort of begins, which is, it's a hard thing to say where does space begin. It really is, because, you know, is it where it gets dark out? Where is it? You know, well, nighttime.
Is it where you can orbit? Is it where you can maintain an orbit for more than a day or what?
Well, you know, you're fast enough, you might be able to maintain an orbit lower, but I don't know if anybody can maintain an orbit of the Kármán line. I don't know if that's ever happened.
Right.
So we call it the Kármán line, just like 62 miles up, 100 kilometers up. That's sort of kind of the agreed upon, you're in space. So the new Shepard's gone up above there. Landed several times, been reused multiple times, so it's like a fully reusable first, or pretty reusable first stage there, and that's when we got a kind of our arguments back and forth between New Shepard and SpaceX, which is like, yeah, but we actually send things at really, really fast speeds, which getting into orbit's a matter of speed. It's really speed's what matters. But anyhow, Blue Origin's developing their own rockets, and they keep moving forward and moving the technology forward. They've been developing their own engines, their own technologies there, and I think they've been doing some pretty incredible stuff, not including the CGI animation we're watching right now. So anyhow, they've got their plan, and part of their plan means building these special rocket engines that they're looking for, you know, getting into space. And about a week ago, Jeff Bezos, if you sign up for the updates from Blue Origin, which I highly recommend you do, Jeff Bezos sent an email out to everybody and first started off by saying, our mascot is the tortoise. We paint one on our vehicle after each successful flight. Our motto is graditum ferociter, step by step ferociously. We believe slow is smooth and smooth is fast in the long run. Deliberate, methodical wins the day, and you do new things by never skipping steps. This step-by-step is a powerful approach to our boldness and a critical ingredient in achieving the audacious. So, I mean, kind of saying we're taking a different step than SpaceX, maybe. Maybe
for you think that that's what that's about? You think that that is affected by the fact that SpaceX had a rocket blow up not only in the sky but also on the launch pad over the last year?
Maybe. Possibly.
Maybe. Oh, because the tortoise, because again, you know, it's just a tortoise, right?
Everybody knows how the tortoise, you know, he finishes not so much second.
Yeah, because that was the other thing, right? Because he mentions the tortoise. There was the other part of that, that it wasn't just the tortoise gets a sandwich, right?
The tortoise crosses a finish line. A story of a tortoise who very slowly walked up to a finish line.
Yeah. So anyhow, there may be, maybe we're reading a little bit too much into it, but anyhow, goes on to get really interesting though, because Jeff Bezos says, here's a preview of our next stop, one we've been working on for 4 years. Meet New Glenn. New Glenn? What is New Glenn and why the funny name? Shepard, Glenn, what does this have to do with? Well, if you break it down, Shepard, and this was pointed out to my friend Ken Montgomery, Alan Shepard was the first American into space, not orbit, but into space, went up above the Kármán line, okay? Which is what the new Shepard does, goes past that line, it's in space, comes back down. John Glenn was the first American to orbit.
Yeah.
So now Bezos has announced the new Glenn, along with a really helpful graphic, which points out in order of height, the Antares rocket, the Soyuz,
so
the Ariane 5.
So many readers.
Yeah, we see the Falcon 9, the Falcon Heavy, and then, whoa, look what's much bigger than that. New Glenn's two-stage, New Glenn three-stage.
I mean, could we at least try to not objectively make this a penis measuring contest? I mean, this is insane to me.
I don't know. I mean, listen, he's just showing a helpful infographic. You know, like, how else are you going to know
how much how bigger big his rocket on? Is? Yeah. By the way.
So anyhow, he's announced plans for what's being called the New Glenn, which is going to have a, well, booster stage that plans to return to Earth. The New Glenn will be the three stage will be 313 feet tall. It will have a 23-foot diameter core. It'll have a launch liftoff thrust of 3.85 million, so almost 4 million pounds. Burning liquefied natural gas and liquid oxygen. And this is also, the BE-4 engines are what they're developing to power the United Launch Alliance Vulcan rocket. So they've been working on the United Launch Alliance developing the next stage rocket. The Vulcan rocket was the one where we kind of pointed out with the sort of Wile E. Coyote plan to capture the first stage engines core, just the engines using a helicopter.
Yeah, you were going to catch it with like a hook, right?
Yeah, listen, cruise ship magician here. Fire eater, whatever Justin does. So listen, you know,
that's not the way I would. You know what? I think I could speak on behalf of, you know, as a prominent fire eater, I'm going to say that's not the way I would capture a final stage or an engine core.
Ryan, you would wrap yourself up in FedEx boxes and cardboard.
Oh boy.
As a former prominent magic blogger, I can say with confidence that this is a specious plan. Dubious.
But anyhow, I like the Blue Origin one better. But anyhow, so Blue Origin plan. So they've announced the New Glenn rocket. Their plan is they say that they want to have this up and launching by the end of the decade, which if you're counting, if you have a calendar, you know, ever since they stopped putting them on every single web page, it's hard to know what day it is. But that's like 3 years' time. 3 years' time. So we're looking at maybe seeing another heavy lift rocket, or maybe our first big heavy lift rocket, if, you know, depending on what SpaceX gets going. So that's exciting news.
So, real quick, Blue Origin, we've talked about this several times before, being a single stage, not to orbit, but past the Kármán line experience, they've been pushing really hard on essentially the tourist experience. And while that's, you know, I'm sure great if you got, you know, we'll say $250,000 to blow, it doesn't seem to resonate with the ambitions of SpaceX, which is like, hey, are you trying to make money? You want to make money? We're going to put your money-making satellites into space so you can make money. Does this now enter them into that camp?
Yes. And Bezos has said for since they started, their plan was to do other things, bigger things. And the new Shepard, to go, what's it good for? Like space tourism. But certainly he's announced that they've wanted to do other things. Bezos has talked about his goal was millions of people living in space, millions of people living and working in space. He really wants to create Star Trek, Starfleet. He really wants – that's a goal for him, not just – Mars, where Musk wants to go, but Bezos is like, let's have millions of people. Like, how about a trillion people living in space? It's something he said. So
sure.
He is super into this. This is his destiny. This is one of the richest men in the world, and this is a thing he wants to make happen. So he closes this with this statement: our vision is millions of people living and working in space, and New Glenn is a very important step. It won't be the last, of course. Up next on our drawing board, New Armstrong. But that's a story for the future.
Oh, man, what a mic drop moment, right? Not only do you announce that finally you're joining the Orbit Club, but also, like, Armstrong, man, that's a good naming scheme. Yeah, of course, that means they're going to the moon. That's brilliant.
Well, first American to touch down on the surface of another planet.
Sure.
Lander.
So, I mean, I guess they're divvying it up. I'd like to think that at the end of some kind of highfalutin billionaire poker game, Bezos and Musk have a quiet conversation, and Bezos is like, look, man, you could have the filthy old red rock. I just want you, just give me space, the rest of space, maybe the moon. You know what? I'll take the moon and the rest of space.
Takes off this watch off his hand, puts it on the poker table.
Yeah. and Musk is like, yeah, but the red one's mine. And he's like, yeah, of course it is. And he says, I mean the whole red one. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, all right. And then he throws his watch down. Done.
Deal me in.
So
the secret billionaire watch pact, as we all know, nothing is sealed in stone. Until
I'd actually take it off my watch as you guys were discussing that. That was amazing.
And then a butler comes in with a silver hammer and smashes both of them symbolically, as now we have a pact to go beyond the stars.
I was thinking more that it was going to be like kind of like they're betting, you know, they're betting for this. So you're thinking like, OK, all right. Otherwise, kind of a quiet week. And I mean, other than like, yeah, we've got another billionaire building an entire launch system to take us there, which between what SpaceX said they're going to do, between Blue Origin, two reusable rocket systems, it's pretty awesome. We have, of course, NASA's totally unreusable $3 billion per launch rocket system. But hey, let's not go there. Sure. So you're thinking that's the news, right? And then, well, remember, we have coming up next week, Elon Musk is supposed to announce his Mars architecture. And people are like, well, is he going to announce the whole plan for Mars, given, like, you know, a rocket blew up on the pad and we still don't know why? Well, on Twitter, this is 4 days ago, Elon Musk gets up late night on Twitter, tweets out. MCT, by the way, is the Mars acronym for the Mars Colonial Transport. And right, he tweets out, turns out MCT can go well beyond Mars, so we'll need a new name.
All right, what time of the day did he tweet this?
Good question.
Ultimate Spaceship Mark II is the suggested name. Okay, 7:22 p.m. All right, so this is not you know, a third glass of red wine hour. This is a intentional marketing decision time.
Well, he's responded to people later in the night, and so
sure.
A suggestion that comes up that he seemed to respond to was the IST, Interplanetary, ITS rather, ITS, Interplanetary Transport System.
All right, yeah. Three letters instead of another letter. I don't know. MCT I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, all right. Brian, we're going beyond Mars. Why are you limited to Mars, Bri? Come on, Bri. Mm.
Yeah, come on. Mars is so yesterday.
I mean, okay, right? Let me put it this way. MCT, at no point in the acronym did TP appear, whereas ITP definitely has TP in it.
What about ICP?
Well, ICP?
It's ITS.
ITS?
Yeah. Interplanetary, all one word, transport system.
That's okay. You know what? That's better than the wrong one I was thinking of. That's I'm okay with ITS.
It's.
You've
seen it?
Yeah, no, that is pronounceable.
Yeah.
Well, are you down with the acronym was BFR.
BFR? Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
the big rocket.
Big friendly rocket.
All right, but let me make this point. Because I'm always excited by all these people talking. I think that Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk have both uniquely proven their cases that when they say they are going to do something, either they are going to do it or is going to come very, very close to happening. And there's going to be a very, very good reason why it does not happen. And usually it's because ambitions greater than the ones that they've set have fascinated them and they are now resetting their goals. However, are we at the point now with those guys because they've both proven enough that them announcing plans is less exciting than it was 5 years ago?
I'll weigh in to say that certainly it's not as shocking, but we have more credibility to them both.
Certainly, yeah. But I guess that's a double-edged sword. Because at the same time, I'm like, let's go. For Bezos, the next big hump for me is let's do one of these live. Let's do one of these with journalists in your facility so they watch you do it and you don't just post a YouTube video in an indeterminate time from when the launch took place, right? Like for Musk, it's continue this track record, continue to launch satellites and let's see the new bigger better come, you know, roll off the assembly line. I think both of these guys are doing amazing things, and I'm thrilled to see where they are setting their sights, because that is certainly important. But at the same time, like, I need some meat now. Like we can't just screw around here on appetizers. Like, these guys have delivered, and I want to see them deliver again.
Brian, do you think that as it lost some of its thunder, you know, now that we're hearing these announcements, are you less excited now?
You're like, no, not at all. Not at all. Not at all.
Oh,
not at all.
iPhone, new iPhone. Great.
Yeah, no. Not at all. As a matter of fact, it's one of those things where it's like, if anything, I've gotten more interested in the game as I learned the subtle nuances, but differentiating the claims that are being made. So it's like I'm more in now than I've ever been before.
Well, I'm not saying that I'm less interested. I'm certainly more interested, right? I'm more invested. But I've had the taste of seeing these things happen. Like, now that is my primary drive, is seeing them happen and not necessarily them being announced, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. So yeah, to your iPhone analogy, I enjoy hearing when new iPhones are coming out, but I am more excited to see the new iPhone than I am to hear about what might be. I am less interested in iPhone rumors than I was back in 2007, 2008. I am more interested to see and feel how it affects my life.
Yeah.
Point. So Musk gave a preview of the SpaceX interplanetary transport system he's going to unveil. I don't know, Bryce, if you can pull that up on Twitter, the link to the video there.
Definitely looking at a Lego army attacking people. Wait, is this was intentionally what he put out, huh?
Yes.
That's amazing. Straight out of the Lego movie, we have a bunch of faux T-1000s or whatever, or T-800s attacking. That's amazing.
And then Benny shouting spaceship. That was at 11 p.m. at night.
All right, that one is definitely three red wines in.
Yeah. He's... God bless Elon Musk and his late night Twittering. So meanwhile, amidst all this, our head of NASA, Bolden, who is a very interesting guy who's, you know, been in charged with the spearheading of where we're going in space and our whole mission in space. He is a former astronaut, former Marine Corps major general, and quite an accomplished person, graduate Naval Academy, et cetera, and, you know, astronaut leader of NASA. They asked him, he was being interviewed about what was his opinion on Blue Origin and SpaceX and them building the heavy launch rockets. And let me make sure.
Hold on. Before you say it, let me call it. This is Babe Ruth's called shot. I'm betting you said, I think that a rising tide raises all boats. And that no matter who you are, if you're helping to break the barrier of getting humanity off of this sorry little petri dish and getting us to our destiny to colonize the stars, then you're doing God's work and helping to complete our mission.
Ding, ding, Brian. On the nose.
Yeah?
Oh, let's hear it.
Let's hear it in his words.
In his words... Mm-hmm. If we talk about launch vehicles, we believe our responsibility in the nation is to take care of things that normal people cannot do or don't want to do, like large launch vehicles, Bolden said. I'm not a big fan of commercial investment in large launch vehicles just yet. But it was the subtext. It was the subtext of
It was in his eyes. His eyes were really saying what I was saying.
Well, I mean, he's not a big fan. Maybe he's a huge fan. I'm not
well,
a big fan.
He also said what regular people... What regular people can't do. It's very clear that Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk bear very little resemblance to regular people. So, I mean, maybe he didn't mean them. He means, like, us putting together a rocket.
Okay, look, yeah. We've talked about this for literally 6 years now. I remember when I was in Orlando for Halloween Horror Nights and we were doing weird things. We were talking about NASA's new role is going to be the Postmaster General. And the Postmaster General does not build all the cars for its fleet of all the people who deliver all of the letters. Their job is to deliver letters. And they buy the cars from Ford and from Jeep and from all these manufacturers. Did this guy just not get the memo that that rocketry is now, there's competing rocket manufacturers and you are going to experience an incredible benefit and it, your job is going to be, get more affordable and cheaper than ever before thanks to all these competing rocket makers?
Now, understand that there's NASA, then there's NASA administration, things come and change. And I think we're all for like, hey, if we're going to we're going to be funding things, NASA's a great thing to fund.
Sure. You know,
let's make that very clear.
Yes.
Now, the previous administrator of NASA, the former deputy administrator is Lori Garver. When asked about the SLS rocket and private developers last year, she said, what we're working with is more of a socialist plan for space exploration, which is just anathema to what this country should be doing. Don't try to compete with the private sector. Incentivize them by driving technologies that will be necessary for us as we explore further. So that was a big part of what she pushed for too. And to NASA's credit, there's been a big component of NASA that has been doing that. That's why we're doing the whole crew launch, the crew vehicle things between Boeing and SpaceX developing that. That's why there's been a bigger push towards developing more private commercial technology. And many people in NASA are pushing for this. There are a lot of people in NASA going, man, like, yeah, let's let these rich cats write the big checks to develop this heavy lift stuff, and let's get the money to go do some really great science and research and fund a lot of other projects. So, you know, instead of what looks like pork barrel politics.
Yeah.
Whoa, what an accusation. I mean, are you saying that the head of NASA, for whom would have to have some kind of relationship with the companies that have built these rockets in the past would somehow be providing an anti-competitive atmosphere so as to continue the status quo of non-reusable rockets that cost $1 jillion?
I mean, be totally honest, no, that's not what I think Bolden's point of view is. Bolden is like many people I've met who have been, you know, career military, career government, and within sort of in that academic environment, they kind of look at like there's territory that the government should do. There's territory that should be the government territory and not for the place for private enterprise to step into. And that they perceive there's a greater security, there's a greater, you know, benefit, whatever. I mean, and there's a perception of that. And I think that's where it comes from. I don't think it's in anything insidious or duplicitous at all. I think he's a very sincere guy, but I think he's thinking that this is its job. This is NASA's job, which.
Yeah, I guess that's always interesting to me that it's NASA's job also means we got to go to these contractors and we're going to pay them what we've always paid them.
You know? And that's the unfortunate part,
like,
right?
It's not like the federal government privatized rocket building, right? They still go to these companies. They go to private companies to get them made.
Mm-hmm. But it's they're the ones dictating what they're going to be. So, you know, you get a group of NASA administrators. They sit down and say, this is what we want. Influenced. I mean, the SLS was designed based upon what were the people who made this shuttle technology and even some of the Saturn V technology? What can we make using their technology? So it was a request based upon what existing vendors were already supplying. And I think that, you know, we're looking at a rocket system that's going to cost $3 billion per launch. $3 billion per launch. And, you know, yeah, you kind of wonder if we said, hey, let's wave a few billion dollars out there for reusable technologies and not a reusable rocket system at all. And that's the thing. By this thing finally launches, you're going to have on the test pads SpaceX and hopefully Blue Origin rockets that are largely reusable in this NASA thing by the time it's fully going through what it's supposed to be, its mission life, so, well into the 2030s or 40s. You know, given what's happened before shuttle technology and how long these things take before we get a replacement in, this is a thing that could be for the 2040s. In that vision, we're not using reusable rockets.
This is an astonishing sentence I'm about to ask that as little as, what, 2 or 3 years ago would seem insane. But with all sincerity, I want to ask, like, incredulously, does NASA have even one program or anything announced that's looking for reusable rockets, or is there their stated plan is just to keep building 747s and flying them into the ocean?
Well, I don't know what, as far as that, like their heavy lift launch thing right now, that's the SLS, and that's been the program they've been pushing, and that's been the unity there. Internally, there's a lot of everything. Again, NASA's a very big agency, and it's filled with some incredibly talented, brilliant people, and they're doing amazing work. And I certainly think that there are people there that are probably within, but they have to, you know, part of the way this thing, part of this works is you go to Congress and you say, we need X billion dollars to fund this project. And Congress says, okay, you have to build this thing that meets these parameters. And a lot of these parameters are laid out for them by Congress, not NASA. And so it's not really NASA's fault in the sense that if they want to get these large amounts of projects, in order to get them funded, you have to get the senators who are from the states where some of these contractors are located to say yes. And if they know their favorite company isn't going to get billions of dollars in work out of this contract, they're just going to say no. And so NASA's in this weird position because, you know, if NASA said, hey, we want to do a totally ground up, you know, from the ground up, brand new reusable rocket system open to every single contractor on the planet, and ain't going to get funded. You know, that ain't NASA's fault. You know, let me make that very clear. I know sometimes we seem, and I mean, particularly, I come across a little bit negative, and I shouldn't be, in that a big part of the problem is the way the funding goes is how it has to get approved through, you know, the different senators.
Well, yeah, and you know, I feel like this is the kind of point that we always wind up circling back to whenever we have this conversation, but we are all in favor of the amazing and talented people at NASA being amazing and talented. And mm-hmm. we think that they can do more of it if their rockets are cheaper.
Yeah.
Because, like, also, like, here's the question. If, let's say, as Bezos said in his email, there are millions of people living and working in space, does that mean that NASA's authority expands? Like, does NASA become a more powerful administrative agency for Americans who are living and working in space, or American companies that want to put up?
I mean, if they're smart, that will become their focus. I mean, somebody, they could make a claim saying, like, hey, we're the ones who regulate what you do outside of the atmosphere, and we're going to see how it goes. And at some point, there's going to be an interplanetary robbery, or an interplanetary murder, or an interplanetary, you know, sexual harassment or whatever, and they're going to want to go to somebody. And my guess is that if NASA is smart and wants to remain a relevant institution, they're gonna fill that void.
Yeah, there's a lot of it right now is in the purview of the FAA, but figuring out, you know, space laws, emerging area. And, you know, if you ever want to check out a book that deals with those frontiers, those early frontiers of low Earth orbit, you might want to check out the book Station Breaker and the forthcoming mm-hmm. sequel to that book, which deal with the emergence of a space agency trying to deal with those sort of conflicts.
Dude, that's amazing. That's awesome.
And I think it's, we kind of think above and beyond, but we sort of forget. So, we got just a quick update on what to look forward to. So tomorrow, and this is a great example of the collaboration between NASA and other organizations, tomorrow NASA is doing a teleconference announcing what they're going to be doing with SpaceX's Red Dragon program. For those of you that may not have heard of it, what this is, SpaceX is planning, I think in 2018, to start sending regular missions to Mars, unmanned rockets to Mars, bringing payloads there. They have a version of the Dragon capsule they're calling Red Dragon that they want to deliver. It'll be the largest delivery of cargo of materials to Mars, to the Red Planet, ever. And they want to launch in 2018. And they said that we're working with NASA. NASA is going to be helping participate in designing payloads to figure out what kind of experiments they want to do. And this is one of the first of many that Elon Musk looks at. This is just a first step of us continuously sending things there. So tomorrow there's going to be a teleconference where they're going to explain what NASA experiments, what they want to put on board there. And the collaboration there.
That is amazing.
And then next week, live from Mexico, there is the International Aeronautics and Science? The International Astronautical Congress, 1:30 p.m. local time, September 27th. Elon Musk is planning on giving the announcement about explaining the new rocket, the Mars Colono Transport, the BFR, the ITS, explaining this rocket, which is supposed to be humongous, explaining their plan for Mars and the stages at which they want to go there. And apparently it's in Guadalajara, and it's going to be streamed, live streamed. The whole conference, all the sessions will be doing that. So you will be able to check that out, and we'll have probably one more episode before then, but just think about that. You know, our next episode after that, we get to talk about the actual mission to Mars. Well,
that's awesome.
Elon Musk. Speaking
of
missions,
that is the brave new world unfolding before us. But you
want
to know what?
Missions, we have a mission.
Yeah, no, you can make the world better right here on planet Earth. Is it by donating to your favorite charity? Sure. You know, you could do that. Is it by paying your taxes? Fine. If you want to brag about it, you can say that. But really, if you want to make a difference and you're listening to this show, why don't you consider keeping the support local? And by local, I mean in Brian, Andrew, and my own pockets. Go to patreon.com/weirdthings to make sure that we continue to make sure that we bring you this very podcast week after week. I mean, come on, folks. Over 400 people have already done it, and we are very, very excited to have them. Why don't you join them? The water's fine. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
There's been some talk about how do you get to places faster? And I think our latest thing to be really excited about is, of course, Project Star Chaser, which is the whole – or Starshock, Project Starshot. Can't talk about Star Chaser. I'm sorry. I apologize for bringing that up. Forget you heard anything about that. Starshot, which is using the phased ray lasers to project a beam of laser light and accelerate something to maybe 20% the speed of light. Now that we think that there's, you know, a planet, Proxima B, the closest star to us has a planet that might be – you could walk on perhaps – and maybe might have caverns and things like that worth exploring. It's exciting to think of how rich our galaxy is with planets. That kind of technology is cool. But that's still the problem. How do you get there? Other people have put out papers saying, yeah, we think you need to hibernate people to send them even to Mars. So you hibernate them for the journey to Mars. And other people are like, no, let's just come up with faster ways to get there. I think Starshot is the most practical, most exciting thing. But there has been talk, this persistent rumor that there is this EM drive. This EM drive is this sort of thruster that uses some sort of microwaves inside of it that somehow mysteriously is able to accelerate.
Yeah, well, yeah. This is the one that's allegedly violates the laws of thermodynamics, right?
Allegedly, Brian.
Allegedly.
Until my
allegedly.
Client has been proven to violate the laws of thermodynamics. I prefer you refrain from that kind of accusatory language.
Sorry, I apologize.
But yeah, this has been
kind of the weird. Like Bigfoot of space travel that doesn't seem to ever get fully debunked. Right?
This and the neutrinos moving faster than light, right? This is the last time we've had something that's squarely in the scientific domain that seems to be, you know, in Bigfoot territory.
So yeah, and that's the there have been at least one or possibly two papers that have come out. So they've said the EM drive doesn't go fast than the speed of light. The EM drive just accelerates without emitting any mass out the back. And there have been two papers that come out that have said, or two proposals, I think one paper have said that actually it does emit, it uses like, it gives off like paired photons, somebody said. And then another one says it's quantized bric-a-brac. I don't know what it is. But there's been a couple papers of physicists, like people who are, you know, of higher education, like Cruise Ship Magician, who have said, hey, no, we think this fits within physics. And then there's also the option, too, is to remember that our understanding of physics is based upon a model. It's a model of how we try to understand things. The model is not the thing. And sometimes things work and they seem to be contrary from the model. And then we have to refine the model and look at it differently and go, oh, now I get it. You know, we can't have perpetual motion. Well, no, actually perpetual motion is sort of a standard state in the universe. You spin something, still something acts on it, it's going to keep spinning. Now, you're not going to perpetually get energy out of it. And it's one of those like, well, okay, if you put it that way, I get it. So this is very, very, pardon me, very, very skeptical, very, very, you know, who knows. But there have been some reports that it keeps coming up again. And there have been some reports that we might hear at some point a research paper. There's been rumors of a research paper that's going to be come out that will explain this. There's been more independent confirmation, perhaps from NASA. And there is just today, an independent scientist known for his criticism of the highly controversial drive has confirmed that it will be presenting information relating to the technology at a conference in Colorado in September. So this was on the 16th. Dr. Jose Rodal posted on the NASA Spaceflight Forum that he will be unable to help another user in the forum who is requesting help to perform an EM drive experiment. Said the reason was he was busy because he would be attending a conference presentation on breakthrough propulsion. When asked to elaborate, he would be attending the – there's a Space Studies Institute going on today, tomorrow, and the day after in Colorado. So apparently we might be hearing some sort of information there. They're apparently going to report on some of the experiments on that. So we will find out what's going on there. So this was a former critic who now says there's something interesting going on.
So this – I mean, I guess by the fact that people have continued to look into this over the past few years and no one has out and out called it complete garbage science.
Well, no, some people have called it complete garbage science.
It doesn't seem to have been fully discredited, right?
Well, we've had in some inconclusive reports where things have happened where people have said, yeah, we were getting some reports of acceleration one way, and then somebody says, yeah, we tested it, but it accelerated the other way. It's very, very inconclusive. So it's hard, you know, it's hard to prove a negative, but there have been some very credible people doing research into this, and I would say it's interesting. Now, meanwhile, I was getting to is a chemical engineer who's been promoting a rival technology called the Canna Drive since 2011, has plans to actually put one on board a CubeSat and launch it into orbit. So that's what I'm getting to. So his plan is like, yeah, we can argue back and forth of what the experimental test stand and, you know, if the test stand is measuring this or if it's measuring some sort of force on that. But I'm going to put one of these suckers into orbit and power it up. And if this thing stays in orbit longer than it should, then I think we have proof that it works.
So he's like, hey, listen, you can all sit in your labs, Point Dexters, and talk about how many angels are going to dance on the head of a pin. I'm going to put this bad bee in space. Say, hey, angels, here's a pole. Hey, why don't you dance on it?
Hey, egghead, I'm cooking an egg on your head, which is on fire because I lit your head on fire, egghead.
Well, and that comes down to every time we get one of these perpetual motion machines that come up, and it's like, great, well, let's turn this thing on and let's just get some power out of it. And like, well, we're working on refinements, you know, where it's like if you have an announcement for a perpetual motion machine, then you should probably be able to just, you know, let it run some stuff, you know, and like not hard to test a perpetual motion machine. But those guys consistently are like, well, we're getting close to it. It has waves or periods where it puts out more than it does, and then periods where it takes on more, you know. And it's, you know, you get into that thing where you realize these are people who are probably extremely deluding themselves, and then realize they have a bunch of investors involved.
Let's real quick wrap our minds around what it would look like. Let's say everything just comes out peachy. Like, let's say that this technology totally proves that it'll work. Do we have any idea, Andrew, how? I guess the perfect version of this technology working would be, let's say, an array of lasers of a suitable size, one on Earth, one on Mars, that is able to propel a craft at, we'll say, 1G, unless it's like a military craft, in which case I would imagine maybe 3G would be acceptable. Like 1G halfway there, and then the other lasers take over and then start slowing it down at 1G. How short a trip might we be looking at in terms of time?
Well, remember, we're not talking. Well, if we're EM drive's different.
I'm stuck on the EM drive.
Oh, wait, you want an EM drive? Yeah. So EM drive's no lasers. EM drive is just this thing you power it on board with some sort of power supply, apply some electricity to this thing, and thing moves forward.
I'm trying to think of the broader implications, regardless of the actual technology that's used.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't like your if you had like a constant 1G acceleration. I couldn't do the math, but like, you know, probably after 30 minutes, you're going to be going like close to the speed of light or something. Ridiculous.
Oh, really? Well, maybe that's a bit ambitious.
I way off then. There, but remember, the constant 1G acceleration means that you're continuously going faster and faster and faster, because once you reach, you know, a certain speed, then.
Right. I guess that's what I'm figuring. And in fact, maybe this is something we should kick out to the audience. If you're a fancy pants person, or
like a
math
scientist
knower.
Or a mathematician, yeah,
that too. That's fine. I call them fancy pants. But like, I would assume it's 1G up to the perfect speed, and then it's 1G to slow down, so that you end up right there at Mars. I guess I'm thinking in terms of Titanic set halfway to Mars.
Yeah, but I mean, if you want to have gravity, just build a rocket with a tether between them and spin it. You know, just spin it.
Well, I'm not worried about just gravity. It's also like let's get there as fast as possible.
The M drive would get you in like 10 weeks or something. You know, the M drive is something like 6 to 10 weeks is the estimate I've heard for how fast it could get you to Mars. And again, theoretically, you've pumped more energy into it. So that's the EM drive. If you were using Project Starshot using the laser propulsion system and you had one array on Earth and one array in Mars orbit, you could get a person to Mars in like 3 days. Of course, they would be in Mars because they would, you know, impact Mars rather fast. So to your point, you would need to figure out a deceleration system. So yeah, you would accelerate it, and like the acceleration for the Starshot's only for 20. It's only 20 minutes of acceleration. After 20 minutes, you're going 20% the speed of light or so. Wow. The reason that the 20 minute thing is that's the point at which the laser beam just diverges too much, and you can't get a concentrated focus to provide any propulsion. So you would have to have something on the other end as you got near, which would then deceleration would be tricky.
I mean, hold on. Isn't deceleration just acceleration in a different direction? Why would it be tricky?
Just from the point of view of just making sure that you've captured it, line of sight and everything else like that, you know?
Sure. But I mean, if... So theoretically, if we're looking at a 1G acceleration and after 20 minutes we're going 20% the speed of light, pretty much I'm going to guess that at that point the Mars array takes over and starts shooting lasers the other direction, and you start slowing down at 1G. So basically, you know, your ship speeds up, and then at some point pivots, flips over, and then lasers start slowing it down, right?
Yeah, I mean, roughly... You know, well, I mean, this is where greater minds than mine.
I guess
mathematical precision that can only be applied by a fire eater, a cruise ship magician, and a former magic plumber.
I mean, I'm not challenging you directly, Andrew. I'm just sort of, you know, throwing it out like if anyone smarter than all of us put together happens to have these numbers, because I'm assuming somebody's run these numbers before, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking right now on a Stack Exchange thing explaining like what 1G of acceleration. So like 3 days of 1G acceleration will get you 2.5 astronomical units.
Wow.
4.5 days will get you 5.5. 9 days will get you 20 more, almost to the Kuiper belt. So
hold on. Let's pause everything we know about practical science right now and just wrap our mind around fundamentals. Let's say there's some kind of method where you could have lasers, array of lasers or beam emitters or whatever, to give like humans, all animals and creatures can live, thrive, and survive at 1G, because that's what we do all the time. If we were doing that on our way to another star, I mean, granted, we have the very serious problem of how to slow down.
Why are you so hung up on the acceleration has to be providing the gravity? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Because where I'm headed towards is what is practical from a practical perspective, the fastest we can ever expect to get from point A to point B in terms of, you know, interplanetary levels. And it seems to me it seems like human bodies cannot tolerate much more than 1G. We could tolerate 3Gs for a little bit. And so like I would imagine that, if that's why I said if a military operation was going on, I would imagine you get a bunch of tough guys who can handle 3Gs for, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 minutes or 20, 40, 30 hours or whatever, or 20, 40, 30 days. I am just using as a baseline the assumption that humans like 1G. And so at 1G, if we solve all the technological everything, where can we go and how fast if we're able to accelerate at 1G to anywhere?
So there's somebody did a handy map. So if you wanted to do constant 1G acceleration, Pluto in 10 days.
Wow.
No deceleration. Deceleration halfway, 15 days. So you could be 2 weeks. You could be a Pluto.
Who's got the time?
But okay,
Mars. So, Mars in basically 2 days.
So okay, this is fascinating. So let's say we get to a point, not in our lifetime, not in our great grandchildren's lifetime or whatever, but there's some colony that's established on, let's say, a star system 5 light years away or so. And both star systems have an array of lasers. One's able to accelerate at 1G for some amount of time, and then the other's able to decelerate or, you know, accelerate in the reverse direction. So we could be looking at a place where, you know, like basically a sea voyage, what we used to know as a sea voyage, would be possible. You accelerate up to whatever speed, spend a few days in weightlessness, and then you have 1G again as you slow down.
Yeah, I guess my point is like the body can take a lot more than 1G. You know, the body could take, you know, could take 3Gs, 4Gs, whatever. And particularly if we're talking at this future point of technology, would you take even a lot more? And, you know, why not just put this inside of some sort of like little tanks where our bodies are laying flat, not moving, and, you know, play virtual reality games and stuff and just go a hell of a lot faster.
So how much faster? What do you think we can handle as far as persistent heavier than Earth gravity?
Let's see if these bastards can do 90.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the upper limits are on that. I'm sure that somebody probably in the chat room could probably find out. But,
yeah, I guess I'm assuming a constraint-free economy in this speculation. I'm picturing that we're all men and women of leisure, and I'm going to guess that for comfort they could go faster, but probably don't want to. I don't know.
Yeah, so we see Bryce highlighted a typical person can handle 5Gs, you know, like before losing consciousness. And again, we're talking future technology or plugged into pipes and tubes and things like that. And, you know, so I don't know. I couldn't really speak to what the limits are there. And again, the bigger problem is like for the short term, it's just figuring out the thing that lets us accelerate that much.
Yeah. Still at work in the chat says for comfort, you probably want it at around 0.75G. That probably is the case. Like once you're like, I think in terms of going on a trip, there's not a big difference between a 3-day journey to get there and a 7-day journey to get there. So, yeah, no, that makes sense.
So anyhow, we've got a lot of options open to us. And so exciting week. Maybe we'll find out if there's this. If I think if any of us were to lay money on the EM drive being real, we would not really put any money down on that. We hope it's real, but we'll find out maybe in the next few days. Maybe we'll be some exciting reports about the possibility of the EM drive. We have later next week. We have tomorrow Mars, another Mars mission plan from NASA and SpaceX. And then later next week, the plan to go to Mars.
Right. Boom. On.
And gosh, guys, you know, it's nice to have a plan. A plan's good. Plans are really good.
Well, I mean, backup plans. I mean, like, if we're going to rate plans, which do you appreciate more, the plan or the backup plan? I know that I've been really glad to have had a backup plan once or twice.
I don't know. Overrated.
What? Until you find yourself without one.
There's no scenario for which I would appreciate your backup plan, Brian. Absolutely no scenario.
All right. Well, hey, Andrew, what are we doing next?
Speaking of plans and backup plans, last time on Journey Quest.
Boonga! Foiled again.
Brian and Justin had stumbled their way into the Town of Salvation 2, which was a lot like Town of Salvation 1, down to every single detail except for like one name change.
That's right.
One was a dream sequence. The other one was totally real. Found their way into this town, and Brian was being held hostage. Justin was in the battle van, and they were trying to figure out how to get Brian free. And after our intrepid travelers wisely determined that the person who was Diamond Club Steve was trying to pass a message to Brian and finally or passage message to Justin. And finally, he got the message to Justin, and Justin was able to break Brian free literally by crashing the battle van into a Dunkin' Donuts. And he had to pull Brian's face free of a bunch of Boston cream donuts because he just didn't want to leave. But They got into the van. They drove off thinking they were home free. They're on their way on the horizon, just the sun setting, beautiful nighttime about to approach. The stars were shining. Back on the road, just Justin and Brian and some strange interloper in the back who tells very, very confusing, convoluted stories about cheerleaders that turned out to maybe be like engineering students. And the next thing they know, they look in the rearview mirror all at the same time, which was really kind of a weird staging, but they did. They see on the horizon a dust cloud, a massive dust cloud created by tons of vehicles, dozens of vehicles, all terrain, super powered, overcharged, supercharged cars, motorcycles, etc. As the inhabitants, the engineering students, who had to all be women, of Salvation 2 have decided to go in hot pursuit of the battle van.
And dude. So this is the moment when we're encountering a roadblock. So we pull off to the side of the road and we decide to enact the backup plan. Look, and as I get out of the battle van, I say, listen, Justin, really, look, I'm not saying I'm glad this happened. I'm just saying I'm really glad that we're prepared. We thought ahead. There's no way to get over the ravine.
Shut up. Shut your mouth and get on the bike.
So
whatever.
Those of you tuning in, they've decided their way to outrun a high-powered all-terrain group of people and vehicles is to get on bicycles. Just so everybody's clear
this. No. We are at a roadblock where it was described to me that we could not get around it in the battle van.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, you could maybe go all the way to the side. You know, you could just take off and go like, you know, on a 90 degree jag one way. You could turn around and try to head right towards them if you wanted to. But you've chosen to abandon your vehicle and ride bicycles. That's fine. That's fine. It's your choice.
No, that was I tried to expand every option that was not us charging right into the teeth of this armada. And it was explicitly explained to me that this was our last option, our last resort.
I don't know who explicitly explained that to you. Was not
then,
the narrator.
Then, Brian, get the bikes back on the rack.
Are you sure? This one's got the horn on it. And I squeak it. It goes,
No. No.
Oh,
no,
my gosh. What's the sound? Oh, my gosh. That's the battle van revving up. And Diamond Steve is leaving you guys there with your bicycles.
We got the bikes, though. It's fine. Look, stealth. Is what we need.
The van blows up as he runs over a landmine.
Oh, dude, see? Told ya. All right.
Oh, but Steve is fine.
Okay, that's fine. Don't worry about that jerk.
He's towards you guys. He's like, guys, oh my God. I can't. Boom! He stepped on a landmine and now he's really gone.
All right, good. All right.
Saves me from having to defriend him on Facebook.
All right, so I grab the bike. I hoist a bike over my shoulder, and I start walking down. I assume is there a path to the bottom of the ravine?
Yeah, you see a path. There's a little ravine. It's an arroyo, if you will.
There you go. All right, right on. So I start climbing on down and moving as fast as I'm able.
Yeah, Brian actually stops to put in his Bluetooth earbuds. He's like looking for the right music because he's so used to like that's how it
I also squeeze out a little bit of I assume I have some SPF 50 on me. I make sure.
Brian's like,
I don't worry about
the last episode of 99% Invisible.
Yeah, I get the back of my neck. I make sure to get the top of my ears. I look around for a helmet and not seeing one. I finally shrug and then I put the lotion over on my skin.
Puts the lotion on his skin.
So I don't get the hose again.
All right, so the goal now is just to get away from the armada at the very least so we are not being hunted down. They're going to assume that we're all dead because our battle van's blown up.
Well,
right?
Okay, but even if they don't, look, here's the thing. They can't drive their cars down into this ravine. We're going into territory they can't reach, and they don't got bikes. We're going to be faster than them.
They don't have bikes.
They have motorcycles.
Well, I mean, it'll take a long time. Come on, that's why we got to hustle. Let's go.
They got dirt bikes. I think they're perfectly capable of riding to the ravine.
All right. Get in the ravine. We're going to the ravine.
Boom, 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 boom. I think they went that way.
See, they don't know. All right. So, since...
Boom, boom, louder. Right there, I see the remnants of their battle van.
Okay, so since we are in a post-apocalyptic thing, I'm assuming NPR isn't around anymore... So I do my best impression of Planet Money.
No, let's go. Enough. No Planet Money.
I know. So I start off with a cute vignette talking about maybe I reenact.
Pause. Skip. that delete. Swipe right, delete.
But you know, okay. You guys hear banjo music. Electronic banjo music.
What?
And before you're about to head off on your bikes, you peer out of the ravine, and what do you see? You see the largest vehicle you can imagine with an array of speakers and what looks like Bryce playing an electric banjo as he's dangling from bungee cords.
Oh, my God. Is it, okay, now. All right, so I squint, and I look real hard. Is it actually Bryce?
I don't know. I mean, we'll address that later on, but you're like, is that Bryce?
All right.
So I assume he's with the or Armada, right?
He may be chained up. You're not quite sure of what the relationship is. He's this hood ornament. And you're like, man, that's kind of very Mad Max, but bit of the banjo is just throwing me for a loop here.
Wait a minute. Okay, wait. Brian, do we need to see if that's Bryce?
No. Nope. What we need to do is not be around when that thing gets here. Now, here's the question. Have they seen us yet? Like, how far off are they?
I mean, they're heading right towards you. I mean, you could stop and do a survey and ask them.
Let's go. Let's move along.
Okay, so there's no outrunning them. So I guess we gotta look for a crag and maybe hide.
Yes.
Are you pedaling or are you still standing there?
I'm pedaling. And I'm saying, hey, Planet Money, why don't you come on and catch up with me as soon as you're done horsing off?
And I'm like out of breath, and I'm like, I'm David Kastenbaum. I'm Stacy, what's her name? Something about inflation. Inflation's when too much money gets in the supply.
So you're pedaling through the ravine, and it starts to narrow down at some point. You're driving along, and you're heading down. You see a path. You want to go left or right?
Let's go left.
Left.
Great, but there's a bunch of rattlesnakes there.
That's fine. We'll run over them. We pedal as fast as we can.
There's like mounds of rattlesnakes, Brian.
We're going to turn around, Brian, and we're going to go right.
Okay, right on. I turn around, and I'm like, for example, imagine you have one rattlesnake. That's real valuable.
I punch Brian as hard as I can in his face, hopefully breaking his jaw so we can no longer.
The rattlesnake jumps out at you, Justin, and you manage to grab him around the neck, and you can use it like a whip if you choose.
I whip Brian in the face with the snake.
All right, I take it to the face, and then I keep going like, you at first think you're really badass because you're the only one with the snake.
All right. So we've turned around and we've gone right. What happens now?
You see a cloud in the distance, though. They're still kind of on to you, and you start to hear the echo of motorcycles throughout the arroyo.
They're getting louder. Faster.
And you hear somebody go, snakes! Ooh, go the other way!
Suckers went left. Am I right?
All right, so you pedal along, and then you have another turn, left or right?
Left.
Good chance. Good choice. You go left. You pedal along. Another choice, left or right?
Left.
Right.
And you split up.
We actually split up, yeah.
And then it rejoins back together because it didn't matter.
Oh, good.
But what were your thoughts going through your heads as you split up, Brian?
My thought is, Planet Money and this episode are brought to you in part by Squarespace.
Justin, what were your thoughts?
I'm going to put the other fang right in his eyeball as soon as I see Brian again.
So you're pedaling along, and all of a sudden, the ravine comes to an end. It's just a sheer wall.
When you say end.
I mean, the walls got higher, and now it's come to a stop.
And these are climbable walls?
Oh, no, it's not.
Okay.
If we go really fast, can we, like, ride the side of it like a velodrome?
You know, you might get some height. It'll look really cool, but you're probably going to fall back down and land on. Oh, and you hear, like, a bunch of scared rattlesnakes slithering down the canyon towards you.
All right. I have a plan, Justin. Won't make a lot of sense right now, but I need you to kiss me.
Brian.
I have a backup plan, and the only way it works is if you kiss me right now. They're about to come upon us.
Do I see anything else? Like, literally, this is just, we are up against a wall. There's literally, like, nothing else. There's no crack.
Oh, he's pushing you up against a wall, all right.
All right. I already have my lips puckered up, and I'm getting closer to it, and I'm like, there's no time, Justin!
I whip Brian in the face the hardest I can possibly imagine with the snake.
And then you hear a voice say, over here if you want to live.
Okay, I have a new backup plan. You don't have to kiss me. Let's go over to this guy.
Great. All right. We head toward the voice.
You see this dark passage, this narrow sort of thin rock, and there's sort of just this little space. It just looks like a shadow there. And the voice says, "Well, you guys are done. Come over here if you want to live."
I'm going. I'm already gone.
All right.
So but I also, I blow a kiss to Justin, who I assume is behind me.
Yeah.
All right. Whatever's between you is between you.
You crawl through this narrow passage, and you hear a scuffling up ahead as those voices, "This way. Don't go that way." And, you know, and so you're scuffling through there, and then you come into a chamber filled with all kinds of... Next time on Journey Quest.
That was an exciting chapter. That might have been our best yet, my man.
Dude, intense.
Chamber of secretions.
Yep.
Stop. Hey, man, I got a pick.
You got a pick?
Yeah. It's a hot new YouTube channel. Just dropped. You think regular YouTube channels are excited?
Can I do my pick first, Brian? I'm sorry. You always go first. I'm going to do my pick.
Go.
I just subscribed to a hot new channel. I don't care what channel you're subscribing to, okay?
Sure.
Shut your channel, whatever you're talking about, because I'm talking about the modern road.
Andrew, can I go first here? Because I feel like I've subscribed to a hot new YouTube channel, and it's so hot, man. You touch it, you touch your keyboard, and it literally burns your fingerprints off. That's how hot this thing is.
Hey, Justin. Hey, can I cut you off for like a minute? I usually don't have a pick this, you know, in this show.
Yeah.
But I found this hot new YouTube channel that I think is also really cool. Like,
hey, guys.
All right. So on the count of three, let's all say it at the same time. Okay.
Ready? One, two, three. Primitive technology.
Polygon. Monster Factory.
I was talking about
so
modern
proud
rogue.
Of you. I'm so proud not one of us actually said the modern rogue. That's amazing.
All right, the modern rogue, ladies and gentlemen. I'll tell you what. There was a day a few days ago wherein on the Reddit there was an AMA page that was filled with some really notable people. Oliver Stone was on there. The lady from Diantwood was on there. And one was Brian Brushwood. I'll tell you what. Brian Brushwood was the number one person who had an AMA that isn't a singer from South Africa.
Yeah, you hear that, Oliver Stone? yeah, man. It's it was a hell of a thing. We are spinning off the Modern Rogue to its own channel, which is a tough thing to do. I think it's the right thing to do because YouTube rewards channels that have consistent programming. Scam School, our programming has been a little bit all over the map. There's some blog stuff. There's some remix stuff. There's some main primary content stuff. We think Modern Rogue could do very, very well, but we need you guys to subscribe so that you can get all the new hot episodes when they come out. So if you go to bit.ly/modernroguechannel, you can subscribe, you get the mixology episodes, you'll hear us talking about stuff. As a matter of fact, take a look at that channel art that we just changed. This was a case where, look at that. That is a terrifying visage of Jason Murphy holding a gun at the camera, but picture instead of a camera, it's your face. And that's a thing that I had to witness just 48 hours ago.
What can people expect on the Modern Rogue?
The Modern Rogue. Dude, it's if Houdini, James Bond and Han Solo had a two-headed baby, it would be Modern Rogue. Everything about what would the perfect Modern Rogue know nowadays? Know everything from how to hack to how to talk your way past the velvet rope, how to mix the perfect martini. It's sort of an aspirational going for one part warrior, one part scoundrel, one part gentleman. It's the Modern Rogue.
Listen, this is amazingly great content. If anybody... If you are a fan of Hacking the System, the show that Brian did with Jason Murphy, this is not just something you would like. This is must watch for you to see. And if you've liked any element of Scam School, You absolutely need to do it. If you have never heard of YouTube, I have a great way for you to get into it. It's called The Modern Rogue.
The Modern Rogue.
The Modern Rogue. Well, I mean, I guess if we're introducing it, we should probably get the spelling right. But yeah, so what's the best way for people to go? If they're just listening to this, like, sure. What do they need to do?
bit.ly/Modern Rogue Channel. We should have a custom URL very, very soon.
Dude.
Excellent.
I think it's great, man. And you guys have uploaded all the stuff that you had previously published on Scam School, like that's on there now. It is just a one-stop shop, man. It's a great shop.
It was a really smart move for us to kind of incubate the show, get it to figure out its voice and make it part, you know, a subdivision of the Scam School family. It's ready to be a beautiful butterfly and fly out on its own.
Any other pick, Justin?
No, man.
I will do a small, tiny, tiny, tiny little plug. Tiny little plug. Tiny, tiny plug. There may be a new episode of The Darker Path that I just got back from our sound engineer, Ernesto, and I actually haven't listened to it yet. I'm going to try to listen to it later tonight, and then I may be releasing that in a RSS feed or something else like that. If you want to know about that, go to darkerpath.com, sign up for the email, and you will be the first to know. Well, I mean, presumably, you know, you'll be in line to know when the new episode drops. So,
go ahead, sign up there. If this is what I think it is very, very fun. It goes in some fun and different directions.
Yes. I think it's that. I'm looking forward to listen to this too. Find out. So that'll be dropping soon. But meanwhile, Modern Rogue, Modern Rogue, Modern Rogue, Modern Rogue. Modern Rogue.
Also, ride a bike. Ride a bike, listen to podcasts.
Also, stay tuned next week because I'm going to release my new YouTube channel, The Maudlin Rogue, where I'm very sad, but boy, do I have questionable morals.
I'm going to release The Mulan Rogue. Really catchy songs. It's great. It's everybody, it's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.